I'm Eric Rosales. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, President Trump says another massive deal was struck with Japan. So what does it mean for the United States? We're at the White House. Growing desperation. As more than 100 groups warn of starvation, we speak to people on the ground in Gaza about what they're seeing. A new report shows the FBI spied on a Catholic priest, what sparked the investigation, and what they looked into. And time to get excited. The Vatican unveils its plan for the upcoming Jubilee of Youth. We'll show you what's in store. These stories and much more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Well, thank you so much for being with us on the Feast of St. Bridget of Sweden, patron saint of Europe. Our top story tonight. We begin tonight with the dire situation in Gaza. It's more than just the violence in the region. Now Palestinians are struggling with starvation and famine. The scenes are heartbreaking. You can see many here swarming around a truck carrying food. Palestinian health officials say at least 10 people have died in the past 24 hours from starvation. More than 100 charity and aid groups are warning of famine. The International Red Cross is also responding, saying in part, quote, IRC's nutrition teams have reported a sharp rise in the number of children being rushed to hospitals because of malnutrition. Their small bodies are shutting down. This is a man-made hunger crisis driven by severe restrictions and a near-total blockade of aid and goods. Well, despite the global claims, Israel Defense Forces say that there is no famine in Gaza as of yet. Today, an Israeli government spokesperson said it is a man-made shortage engineered by Hamas and blamed the United Nations for withholding aid.
700 aid trucks for the United Nations to pick up inside of Gaza. That means they've gone through security and they are waiting on the Gazan side of the border. Now, this is a bottleneck which has been caused by the United Nations. And it's the main obstacle to maintaining a consistent flow of humanitarian aid into Gaza.
And joining us now from Gaza is Hisham Mahana with the International Red Cross. Thank you so much for joining us. First off, can you describe the situation for us on the ground in Gaza?
Hello, Eric, and to the viewers, and thank you for having me. Actually, the situation in Gaza has been extremely dire for a long time for civilians and for those who are trying to help, including humanitarian workers, healthcare workers, and first responders. Recently, we have been witnessing an increase in the armed hostilities across the Strip, scarcity of food, inavailability of clean, safe water, and hard access to healthcare. There have been even less functional hospitals and healthcare facilities that can respond to the large influx of patients that are dropping into the emergency departments by the hour. We have a field hospital in southern Gaza Strip in Rafah. It's the only fully functional field hospital. It is basically rooms of canvas with the 60-bed capacity only. And it has been responding for the past 2 months for a large influx of casualties. Most of them are shot with gunshot wounds, and some have shrapnel. And they have most of them have indicated that they were trying to reach aid at distribution sites. So this has been the daily reality. Unfortunately, we're witnessing on a daily basis the killing of civilians, the injury of civilians, and 1,000 dignities are lost every day in Gaza.
Yeah, I understand that many of the aid workers are even joining the same food lines out there and are at risk of being shot as well, are they not?
Everyone in Gaza is impacted by the situation. Healthcare workers, doctors, nurses, civil defense, and aid and ambulance drivers and paramedics, they're all facing the same challenges on a daily basis.
Now, the Israeli government says that this is a manufactured crisis by Hamas. How would you respond to that?
I would respond that there is absolutely a catastrophic situation in Gaza that has been ongoing for over 21 months now.
Correct.
And it started starting on the morning of October 7th, and it's still not resolved yet.
Now, more than 100 organizations are sounding the alarm about life-saving aid that's needed there. Do you think that this will change anything?
I think actions speak louder than words. I think we have received and heard of many statements recently. Any efforts are welcome that would only lead to help alleviate the suffering and put an end to the daily bloodshed that we are witnessing in Gaza. The solution is clear. There is international humanitarian law that must be upheld by all parties and respected. That includes the protection of civilians, the entry of humanitarian aid, and the release of hostages unconditionally right. and immediately. And this is the main message we have been trying to deliver to every state member, to every politician, to every community leader, to every armed group representative we even meet as part of our mandated work. And that's the key. That's one key solution for this crisis.
Well, Eshan Mahama, thank you so much for joining us. We'll continue to keep you and the other aid workers out there in our prayers.
Thank you so much.
A third round of talks between Russian and Ukrainian officials has concluded in Istanbul, Turkey. The two countries agreed to exchange more prisoners of war, including both military personnel and civilians. The head of the Russian delegation announced that Moscow is ready to hand over 3,000 bodies of fallen Ukrainian soldiers, while Ukraine proposed a leaders' meeting by the end of August. Moscow responded that such a meeting should only be for signing documents, not for discussions, and the peace deal terms must first be finalized. Well, back here in Washington, D.C., President Donald Trump calls it a massive deal that what he says will create hundreds of thousands of jobs and bring hundreds of billions of dollars to the U.S. The president is talking about a new trade deal just inked with Japan, which follows new agreements he secured with the Philippines and Indonesia. White House correspondent Owen Jensen joins us now with the very latest. Owen.
Eric, President Trump has been fired up on social media, posting multiple times about his trade deals. He says he's trying to get other countries to open their markets to the USA.
In the East Room, President Donald Trump tells cheering Republican members of Congress,
"But I just signed the largest trade deal in history. I think maybe the largest deal in history with Japan."
The trade deal between the world's number one and number four economies would place a 15% tax on imports from Japan. That's lower than the 25% rate President Trump earlier threatened. The president posting, "There has never been anything like it. Perhaps most importantly, Japan will open their country to trade, including cars and trucks, rice, and certain other agricultural products." In the press briefing room, Caroline Levitt told reporters,
"But the centerpiece of this deal now is the president got Japan to commit to $550 billion in investments to revitalize American industries."
Japan's prime minister acknowledged the new trade agreement, saying it would benefit both sides. The president also discussed an LNG, liquid natural gas, deal with Japan.
"And I said to the Japanese trade representatives, and these were the top people, we concluded the one deal, Doug, and now we're going to conclude another one because they're forming a joint venture with us in Alaska, as you know, for the LNG."
But tariffs continue to be a source of uncertainty for consumers and businesses. The House Minority Leader says Americans are paying thousands of dollars of additional costs.
"Well, the cost of groceries and goods is going up because of Donald Trump's reckless and random tariff policy."
Also tonight, a new Marquette Law School poll reveals that President Trump's approval rating holding steady around 45%. The same poll also shows that most Republicans support him, most Democrats do not. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you so much, Owen. Well, it's a tale of two chambers in the U.S. Congress. The U.S. Senate is facing partisan headwinds over government funding for next year. While over in the U.S. House, Speaker Mike Johnson is closing up shop to begin a six-week August recess after the Jeffrey Epstein scandal shut down the floor this week. Meanwhile, several lawmakers introduced a bill requiring the Justice Department to turn over all the Epstein files, and they say it's not going away.
It would behoove the speaker to bring this to the floor. It would be in the best interest of this institution. Just vote this out. Give it to the Senate.
He doesn't want to embarrass the members of his own caucus. and he knows that the resolution would pass.
Under House rules, lawmakers would vote on the binding resolution when they return after Labor Day. Speaker Johnson says he has no fear over an Epstein vote, but he will not allow the House to be drug into political gamesmanship.
We're not going to allow the Democrats to use this as a political cudgel. Remember, they had 4 years. Hold on. The Biden administration held the Epstein files for 4 years. Not a single one of these Democrats or anyone in Congress made any peep about that at all. They could have brought a discharge petition at any point in the last 4 years. They chose not to.
Meanwhile, in the Senate, there's a battle brewing. This one over government spending and the threat of a shutdown come October 1st. Some Democrats say Congress ought to stay in session.
Speaker Johnson shouldn't be skedaddling out of town. He should be sitting here negotiating with us. And so he's not doing his job. And he should get back here and start negotiating, but they're running away.
And many Republicans in both chambers agree.
We're $36 trillion in debt. We got all this stuff going on, and we're headed home. Yeah, and I'd love to go home. I'm grateful to see my wife and daughter, but dadgummit. Let's get to work.
But Senate Majority Leader John Thune accuses Democrats of obstructing the appropriations process and adds Democrats are threatening to shut down the government.
The Democrats have indicated because they're so upset over the rescissions bill last week, which, by the way, cut 0.1% of all federal spending, that somehow they can use that as an excuse to shut down the appropriations process and therefore shut down the government.
Senator Tommy Tuberville tells me Republicans need to get the job done.
Now, I'm willing to stay here. I can't speak for everybody, but we've got to do this. We only got 3.5 more years with President Trump, and he needs his team in place. We need to get these appropriation bills done.
So far, Congress isn't making much progress on those 12 appropriation bills. Lawmakers only have 28 days when they return in September to avoid a government shutdown, and that means another continuing resolution might be necessary. But a CR would also face opposition. Well, joining us now is Lisa Miller, a Republican strategist. Lisa, thank you so much for joining us. Let's return to the controversy surrounding the Jeffrey Epstein and President Trump. The Wall Street Journal is breaking some news right now, reporting that the Justice Department told the president that his name is in the files, among other people. What's your reaction to that?
Well, Eric, this entire issue is horrifying. And I think that everybody that's paying attention feels the same way. I think that we need to have a very specific and fact-based investigation. And the problem, as you and your listeners and viewers understand, is that Washington's politics tends to confuse and distract and really stand in the way of progress for the issues that really matter to the American people. So there is a lot of political gamesmanship. It's a back and forth. I mean, it's really a toss, a game of baseball, tossing back and forth. I mean, even the Nats have to play 9 innings in these kinds of circumstances, regardless of how poor the playbook is for them to get through. So the difficulty today is that regardless of how complex this issue is, the fact that folks are pointing to this specific piece of this bigger, broader, more really disturbing issue is that politics has got to get out of the way and Congress has got to get back to work on the issues that the American people care about.
Yeah, exactly. Speaker Johnson says, you know, it's a fine line that you have to be able to protect the victims, but also release the information as well. But I got to tell you what people really care about out there. It seems to be about grocery prices, the price of gas. They're really concerned about the economy right now, are they not?
Absolutely. I mean, this to me seems like we're fiddling with the drapes while the American people are feeling as if the house is burning down.
Correct.
They're incredibly unhappy with the issues that matter to them most. And while people want answers, they want answers about what happened with this particular circumstance and this particular situation with Jeffrey Epstein, it's horrifying. Set that aside, we all need to be able to know how we can predict our family budgets and how we can predict our life circumstances in a way that cannot be done if we're standing in the way with all kinds of resolutions that are not letting progress happen further.
Well, and speaking of progress, I mean, I just reported that the appropriation bills, they still even haven't gotten to that yet, and we may see another CR, continuing resolution, in the near future. Could this really impact Republicans' chances in the 2026 midterm elections?
Well, you know, I don't know yet, Eric. I mean, I think the one thing that we can say from the very beginning, and you and I have been watching this very closely, is that there's been a lot of not necessarily expecting that the Republicans would get a lot done in the House. I think Speaker Mike Johnson has overperformed every single time as it relates to getting the work done. If it's a CR, well, then let it be a CR. Unfortunately, we wanted to see things happen in the appropriate manner and the way that we do, the way we used to do appropriations bills. More importantly, though, what the Republican House and the Republican Senate are trying to deliver, regardless of some of the other important and necessary distractions, is that they want to get the appropriations bills done. So if it's a CR, it is not the proper order and the way that they wanted to get it to happen. But they would be more than willing to get that CR in place so that the American people can get the access to the resources that they need, as opposed to standing in the way with politics and gamesmanship, which, by the way, if they do deliver that, then it very well could play to their favor when we come to the ballot box next November.
Republican strategist Lisa Miller, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Eric.
Well, disturbing new findings by members of the House Judiciary Committee. A committee report now confirms special FBI agents in the Richmond field office spied on a priest because he refused to discuss private conversations that he had with a parishioner who was converting to Catholicism. According to the report, the Richmond FBI investigated the priest's background, monitored his travel plans, and even looked into his credit card information. The investigation was allegedly launched after the priest became uncomfortable with the FBI's questions about the parishioner. He then said he needed to speak to church leadership and an attorney before answering any questions. The Richmond area priest was part of the Society of St. Pius X, which holds an irregular legal status with the church. EWTN News Nightly was able to catch up with the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, Congressman Jim Jordan, today. We asked him about the committee's new report and the FBI spying on a priest simply because he didn't divulge information on a parishioner.
They also were trying to violate the priest penitent, the pastor parishioner confidentiality. And then they followed this guy around. They got his bank records, and it was all based on the Southern Poverty Law Center saying certain things about pro-life Catholics, and oh, we got to go investigate them. Chris Ray told the committee this was isolated, this was just the Richmond field office. Not true. It was the Richmond field office, it was the Louisville field office, it was the London office, all involved in this activity. So it was much broader than the director of the FBI led us to believe.
According to the leaked memo in February of 2023, the FBI claimed it was looking into ties to terrorism among those who supported the traditional Latin Mass. Since then, former FBI Director Christopher Wray has resigned. But we asked Congressman Jordan, can Congress demand more agents to be held accountable?
We may need to even look at, is there anything legislatively we can do? So we can look at all that. And then, frankly, we can get this information to the Justice Department for them to decide, was there any type of criminal activity going on here, violation of people's fundamental liberties, First Amendment, freedom of religion rights. So we'll have to see.
It is important to note that the FBI wouldn't comment on the new report. Well, we still have a lot more to come on EWTN News Nightly, including a victory for women, why advocates are applauding a move from the U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Committee, and lawmakers in Texas take new steps in a probe into the deadly floods earlier this month. Back, the U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Committee bans biological men from competing in women's sports. The group cites an executive order from President Trump signed back in February that threatens to cut funding for organizations allowing transgender athletes in women's sports. The new policy is listed under USOPC Athlete Safety. National governing bodies like sports like swimming and track and field are expected to comply with the directive. This follows a similar move by the NCAA, the governing body for college sports. For more now, we turn to Julie Gundlach, director of Independent Women's Network. Julie, great to have you back. First off, what's your initial take of this move by the U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Committee?
This is a victory for all women. But I have to say, special shout out to Riley Gaines and Peyton McNabb and the many other female athletes who have fought so bravely for this. I also think President Trump deserves a pretty significant shout out. This would not have happened without Trump's executive order banning males from competing in women's competition. So, you know, again, huge shout out to these athletes, these female athletes, but also President Trump. A great day for women today.
Exactly. You know, President Trump signed that executive order back in February. And, you know, but why do you think that the U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Committee did the change right now?
Well, it's very interesting. They did it very quietly. The change appears on their website in a document called Athlete Safety Policy. But when you first look at it, it looks unchanged. You actually have to go into an addendum where they mention Executive Order 14201, but they don't say what that is. And then you, if you look that up, well, there, it's President Trump's keeping men out of women's sports. So you get the sense that they were reluctant, that they have actually said that they've done this to comply with the executive order, but it leaves a lot of questions. Will they continue this post a Trump administration, or will they go back to allowing men in women's sports?
And how far-reaching could this be? I mean, as we mentioned, the national governing bodies for both swimming and track and field, they're likely to follow suit, are they not?
Yes, absolutely. Look, this is the type of thing that is trend setting. So we will likely see, we've seen this with the women's fencing organization. They've recently come out and said, okay, we're going to keep men out of women's fencing. And we've seen some other bodies, some sports bodies come out and say, look, it's time for a change. But the Olympic Committee, the Olympic and Paralympic Committee making this change, it's huge. And we will likely see more follow suit.
Yeah, I mean, this could also go to other countries, could it not as well?
Absolutely. Look, we have seen a change over the last, I would say, year. Women, again, like Riley Gaines, like Peyton McNabb, like so many of these women have fought for this. I mean, even just people like me who aren't necessarily in the athletic field have really fought for this. And I think it is getting louder. People are starting to see how unreasonable it is. Even Rahm Emanuel went on a news program recently and said, you know what, I'm not really comfortable with men in women's sports. So I think we're seeing a chipping away at this. And I think we're seeing a trend in the opposite direction too. And I say, you know, a trend, it's really actually bringing common sense back to these decisions. This would have been unheard of, you know, 10 years ago. And so it really is, I think, a return to common sense and to reality for the sports universe.
Well, Julie Gundlach, thank you so much for joining us, director of the Independent Women's Network. Thanks again.
Thanks for having me.
In other news, officials in the state of Texas begin their investigation into the deadly flooding on July 4th. One state senator says the probe will be difficult but necessary.
Before we move on, I'd like to set the tone for these proceedings. Members, as you have no doubt aware, the subject matter we will cover in this hearing and in future hearings with our select will be heartbreaking and emotion-filled.
State lawmakers are set to travel next week to Kerrville, Texas, to talk on site with first responders and other officials. The floods earlier this month killed at least 135 people and destroyed thousands of homes. Up next on EWTN News Nightly, descending on Rome, why the Eternal City is going to look a little bit younger next week. It's an exciting time. Preparations are underway at the Vatican for next week's Jubilee of Youth. The Holy See calls it one of the most important moments of the Holy Year, which will see Rome open itself to the world, including areas marked by conflict.
The Jubilee of Youth represents the most eagerly awaited moment of the Holy Year because it's the one with the highest number of participants. Pilgrims come from 146 different countries. 68% comes from Europe and the rest from other continents. Special mention should be made of the young people coming from war zones, Lebanon, Iraq, Myanmar, Ukraine, Israel, Syria, and South Sudan. This is an example of an embrace that includes the new generations from all over the world.
L'abbraccio di tutti i giovani del mondo.
The city is ready to welcome the world. This event will feature the largest technological setup ever created to safeguard the upcoming Jubilee of Youth in Italy, consisting, among other things, of a 500-square-meter control room that will watch over the area hosting the pilgrims. Most of the Jubilee events were held in accordance with the care of creation philosophy, in order to bring the dimension of environmental sustainability into the Jubilee.
And we want to remind you that EWTN will have live coverage next week of the Jubilee of Youth. Be sure to check EWTN.com for more information. We want to thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Eric Rosales. Have yourself a wonderful night. Y vaya con Dios.